Welcome back to Not Half Bad. This is one of your hosts, Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find me at RumbleSBN on Twitter or EcosBias on Twitter or at RumbleInTheGarden.com. This week, Dave White will not be joining us. He is off promoting his books and such. But we have a couple of special guests, one covering Creighton and one covering Cincinnati basketball. First up on the docket is a conversation about Creighton with Matt of White and Blue and Review. This week, St. John's faces the Creighton Blue Jays once again. Duck McDermott pulled out a win with a three-pointer in Omaha just a week and a half ago. And St. John's is hoping for revenge. There's a lot of excitement around New York and a lot of excitement maybe even nationally as St. John's starts to surge. But Creighton is an effective three-point shooting team. And they also have Grant Gibbs coming back. We're going to talk a little bit about that, about Creighton's place in the Big East, and even more.
Hi, I'm Matt DiArenas from White and Blue Review, as Norman said, and I cover Creighton athletics.
Welcome to the podcast, Matt. We're happy to have you. So, pretty big matchup coming up. St. John's has a real hope of, maybe continuing their surge. They've won five of their last six, and they think they have a chance against Creighton. And more than that, it's a really big game for the Big East in general. You know, you have this, high-end team and a chance for them to really make a statement in Madison Square Garden. And St. John's also wants to make a statement.
Yeah, I think all the planets are starting to align for, this matchup. I think, it's the consensus, player of the year to be's first trip to the Madison Square Garden. It's a rematch of a game that went down to the wire and finished on a, heroic moment. St. John's is starting to play like the team everybody, predicted they would be. Creighton is, ranked 12th in the nation. The Big East has a big win over a Big Ten, Final Four contender. I think everything around this conference, really, even outside of St. John's and Creighton, is exciting, but also because of how this game ended a week ago, on the 28th of January, is kind of, leading to this matchup and creating its own hype, if you will.
Now, to be fair, St. John's did have to make a huge comeback to get back in the game. Is Creighton worried about this matchup, or is it just sort of we just need to play better?
Oh, absolutely. In the past, Creighton hasn't lost many games in the last 4 years, but when they have, it's typically been to teams that, are big, long, athletic, 1 through 5, and are able to create turnovers, are able to generate points off those turnovers, are able to, key in on Creighton's perimeter shooting and limit it. Creighton isn't a team that's going to create turnovers themselves. They kind of just live off your mistakes if you give it to them, but they're not really going to, win a game off of trying to turn you over. So, in contrast to that, Creighton has to be a team that limits points off turnovers. They have to,
their own mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah. They have to be there can't be a big discrepancy in points off turnovers. Otherwise, Creighton's they're going to find themselves in a fight, or they're going to find themselves on the wrong end of a blowout. But, like, in the St. John's first matchup with St. John's, the Red Storm had a 21-4 edge in points off turnovers. And especially down the stretch in the second half, that was a big key to the game. So, the way I see the second matchup playing out is turnovers is going to be the key again, because I think St. John's is going to come out with the same defensive strategy and trying to, because they did have success limiting the other players. They held them to just 24 points between 8 guys. So, Doug McDermott's 39 points notwithstanding, you don't expect a guy to do that every night, even though he's capable. But it's going to come down to how St. John's is able to limit the other players not named Doug McDermott, and how Creighton is able to limit turnovers. That's kind of going to be the back-and-forth battle that I anticipate and how this game's going to be decided. What do you think in that area?
Oh, well, I was going to say just that to for the listeners. Matt's referring to the way that St. John's basically gave Doug McDermott the Jordan rules kind of defense. They decided to play off of McDermott. Well, not exactly. They actually did have Jakarr Sampson trying to defend him, and they let him get his shots, but they would never send a second man over to defend him. So McDermott could score, but they wanted to stop the other players. So Ethan Rogge didn't get his first three until, I think, about 4 minutes into the second half, when there was just a defensive breakdown. St. John's, while they did fall behind as much as 16, or was it 18, I forget, in that first game, they did a really good job of limiting the other players, forcing turnovers from, I think it was from Austin Dingman and from Manigat and from Austin Chapman. So, you know, St. John's had a game plan that was very interesting, even though the main story was the way that McDermott scored 39. That's spectacular, but that was almost by design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of something St. John's was going to live with. You know, when they went out there, they're like, they weren't hoping he would score 39, but they were hoping that, you know, he would get his, whatever it was going to be, and that everybody else was going to struggle. So, and they were going to hope that that was the winning strategy, and it almost turned out to be.
It was pretty effective, I got to say. It was pretty effective. And I guess from the St. John's perspective, you know, there's that feeling that playing that game at home, maybe that means something. Maybe it means you get an extra call. Maybe it means that you're a little hyped up. You know, I know McDermott and his dad are hyped up. You know, that they, what was it? They didn't set foot in the garden when they came for Big East Media Day. Was that the story?
Yeah, Big East Media Day came and went, and they did not visit Madison Square Garden. Player or coach, father or son, they stayed away from it. They wanted their first trip to that arena to be for this game, for this purpose. And
business purposes only.
Yeah, make it a business trip, exactly. So you kind of like to see that when you're watching an athlete or a coach or somebody who's supposed to have a chip or somebody who's supposed to look for that extra edge. When you hear that kind of a thing, you think, you know, okay, well, they're creating their own hype here, so that it might create a pressure situation that they're not prepared for, but it also says that, you know, they kind of respect the arena, they respect its, you know, its history, and they kind of want to make their mark, their first trip on it, memorable.
You know, I got to say, and this is a little off topic, I've been thinking a lot recently about just the concept of how athletes or high-level athletes have to hype themselves up. You know, thinking a little bit about, you know, Richard Sherman's, you know, his verbal explosion in the NFC Championship game. And I think that's a very important part. You know, I think players have to have something to focus on, something, a sort of concept in their head. Like, you know, when I set foot in here, I'm going to make magic. Or, you know, I'm going to just start yelling at people just so I put myself kind of on blast so that, you know, I have to react and I have to play my best so I don't embarrass myself.
Yeah, you definitely see that out of the ones who stand out. And I don't know if it's with all athletes and then just the ones that are good, you notice it. But, you know, with the standout athletes, you notice that there's some kind of chip, there's some kind of edge they have that they create themselves to kind of get them. I don't know if that's what sets them apart as far as great players and good players, but it's more noticeable, you know, when you see a great performance, when you see a great player and, you know, he's doing this on this kind of stage or in this kind of moment, that there was a certain point where they kind of flipped a switch and, you know, created a situation for themselves that you'd think, ooh, but then they responded and then you're like, oh, well, that's why.
Yeah. I mean, I think McDermott in particular is an impressive athlete. Even, you know, even though he put the pressure on himself to stay for 4 years, which is impressive. I mean, he probably could have left after his sophomore year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think his draft stock has changed drastically in those 2 years. I think, you know, you're talking about, I think he was maybe early second after his sophomore year to where now he's, you know, mid-first, maybe in the 10 range, I guess, now. But,
wow, that high? That's impressive.
Yeah, I think they had him.
Because I thought he was a guy that people had said, even as a sophomore, that you could see him getting picked in the low 20s. And last year it was like, you know, mid-20s, late teens, and he's probably about the same now. Just because he's a guy where you don't see him developing more. You know, he's not one of those guys who's going to become a superstar, but he's going to be a very good player for you.
Yeah, I think they had him around 10 after St. John's, actually, interestingly enough.
Oh, wow.
But, so you improved his stock. Yeah, I think what people are noticing is, you know, they obviously said when scouts were watching him that he wasn't athletically raw. You know, he was pretty much developed as far as athleticism goes. So, you know, it's all just about what he's able to do. And I think this time in the off season with, you know, with the Team USA and then, you know, playing in the Big East Conference, and then they're starting to see he actually has developed his game a little bit more. You know, he's better off the bounce now. He can do his own shot off the dribble. He can go to his left, his right. He can score with either hand. He can, you know, he can spot up and shoot. He has that Dirk Nowitzki fadeaway now that he's pretty much perfected. He and Durant, and then, you know, he's got range. So I think people are starting to see that he actually has improved his scoring touch. He's not just a catch-and-shoot guy or a post-up guy, an undersized four. You know, that kind of has contributed to his rising draft stock a little bit. So he's actually...
Yeah, there'll always be a question about his defensive athleticism, I suppose. But he's a gamer, and, you know, he's one of those guys where, you know, if you're really watching the NBA, you'll realize that there are a lot of guys who people, you know, were wowed about their athleticism. And they make it in the league just fine. But you see them, you know, play defense, and you think, you're just not that good at it. You know, you just don't have the head for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very...
The
amount of lockdown guys in the NBA is pretty rare, so I don't think people – I understand the criticism, and I understand, you know, who's he going to guard. I understand that question. At the same time, he's one of the best scorers in the world, period, you know, at any level. So, you know, with the way he's able to get his shot. So I think you have to take that into account as well.
Yeah, indeed. So, okay, more and less about McDermott and more about the rest of the team, because I think that's going to be the big concern for St. John's. Mm-hmm. What does the rest of the team look like, especially now that Grant Gibbs is back?
Well, with Grant back, and that's something that is also interesting for this matchup too, because St. John's didn't get a chance to see him and, you know, kind of play against him and see what he does. But with Grant, you pretty much have an extension of the coach on the floor at all times. So, you know, he's a communicator, he's a decision maker, you know, he understands the system, he understands basketball, period. He's a very heady player, he's kind of a, you know, an old-school player. He makes good decisions with the ball. He knows where guys should be on the floor, you know, at the right times. And, you know, in situations, especially with going on the road at St. John's, there might be some situations where, you know, St. John's goes on a run or Creighton finds himself down big. In those situations, that's where Gibbs is kind of at his best. You know, he's a very calming influence. He can rally the troops. He can get them to focus and not worry about the extracurricular stuff, the crowd, the deficit, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what he's always brought to the team.
Yeah, as a sixth-year player, I suppose he does have that extra experience as well. You know, he's a solid shooter. He's a, you know, I guess he plays really more of a small forward, though he does bring the ball up at times, right?
Right, yeah, he's more of like a point forward, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he returned last night against DePaul, and, you know, he had 8 assists, 1 turnover from the 3 spot. So that's kind of what we've come to expect out of watching Gibbs, and it'll be interesting to see how St. John's counteracts him with their first time seeing him.
Sure, and also interesting to see how Grant is in his second game back, and maybe the team. Do you think that influenced that and the long layoff? Do you think that influenced the game last night where Creighton did, I wouldn't say struggle exactly, but DePaul certainly kept it close deep into the second half?
Yeah, I think, you know, Russ is, you know, it's always a factor in sports. When you have a layoff, you're not always going to click right away as quickly as you want to. So I think that had something to do with last night. They weren't, you know, totally in sync. And then especially trying to get Grant back in the mix, as you just said, you know, kind of, you know, your chemistry is just a little bit different, even though it's supposed to be improved, it's still not where it should be. So getting back into flow things. Also, and this was kind of a big key, was DePaul was had a lot of success on the offensive boards last night, and, you know, second chance points. And Creighton was missing Devin Brooks, who's currently under the weather and kind of uncertain for this St. John's game, but he's one of the best rebounders on the team, even though he's just a guard. So that kind
of, he's 6'2". Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He was 6'2", but he knows how to get them. So that was kind of a factor too, in missing him in his ability to grab rebounds, and it kind of that's kind of where DePaul was keeping themselves in the game, was on, you know, missed shots, putbacks, and that sort of thing.
On the glass, yeah. So I guess thinking about Creighton's place and Creighton's adjustment to the Big East, how's it gone, and how's the Big East feel for Creighton fans?
Well, for Creighton fans, I don't think they could be any more excited than they are now. Although if they continue this stretch, Madison Square Garden might find out that's a different scenario. But you know, off to 9-1 start. I don't think you could have imagined that. The way they handled Villanova, I don't think you could imagine that. You know, when you look at the attendance numbers, I think three of their biggest crowds have been for Big East home games. And, you know, Villanova hasn't even come yet. So I think fans are responding to this new conference. They're certainly – the excitement level has certainly stayed consistent. It hasn't leveled off at all yet. And as far as the players go, I think, you know, this is the reason they came back. So they didn't just come back to play Marquette and say, okay, well, we got that over with. Now we're in a new conference. You know, they came back to make a statement. You know, they came back to play in some exciting games and some exciting matchups, some new arenas. You know, and then Madison Square Garden is coming up tomorrow, Hinkle Fieldhouse next week. You know, this is all still new to them. They feel like freshmen again. You know, and you can see it in their energy level on a consistent basis that, you know, they're not taking this for granted at all. They're trying to make this as memorable as possible.
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, it's I am pretty impressed with their level of energy and attentiveness. And not that they were any less last year, the times you got to see them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these guys have come to play, and they've come to prove that if their style of basketball really, really can win on this level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, it's good to see, as you know, a fan or someone who's covering it, you know, because in past years you could see, even in games where they would win against, you know, Missouri Valley Conference opponents, where they just weren't really, they were kind of just going through the motions. You know, there's a team where you can just walk out on the floor, roll the ball out, and, you know, you're 20 points better than them already. The way they approach it this year is they're really just kind of, you know, hey, we're even with this team, or hey, we're not as, you know, we're underdogs right now. We're trying to play with that chip on our shoulder and trying to prove ourselves. They've kind of sustained that mentality throughout the year, and they really haven't had that lapse where you're like, okay, well, they don't really look locked in right now. So, I mean, even in the Providence game, that was more of what Providence was doing as opposed to what Creighton wasn't doing. So,
it's fascinating to think about how, you know, speaking of a team being locked in, the fact that I do think that there are some, you know, there's certainly a lot of excitement around these parts. You know, St. John's writers, St. John's fans, and even nationally, it seems like there are a couple of people picking, you know, St. John's maybe to win, or at least to give Creighton a really, really good run tomorrow night in the Garden.
Yeah, you guys are kind of late bloomers, but, you know, I guess, you know, as long as you meet your expectations, it doesn't matter how you got to that point, right? But what has been the key?
But it's hard to meet those expectations from this kind of hole.
Right, right, exactly. You didn't do yourself any favors, but you know, as far as your margin of error currently, but you know, you still have a chance. Well, I guess, what do you see as the reason that St. John's has kind of been able to get going late here? Is it just young players finally growing into their, you know, growing into like maturing, and they're not freshmen anymore, or you know, what's been the key for St. John's turning it around?
I'll say a couple of things. One, you know, the whole concept of them being young players and turning it around is a little silly and almost laughable to me. Mm-hmm. It's you know, we've got a bunch of juniors. They're not that young, you know. And it's weird that it took them this long to cohesive. I don't know what the word would be. I completely lost the English language right there. I apologize.
That's how the team's been,
to
right?
Come
so
together.
They make you lose the English
what?
Language.
Yeah, they make you lose the English language in a torrent of cuss words. but to come together like the Beatles, yes. You know, it's weird seeing that this team took so long, even given their Europe trip, to come together. But you know, a couple of things that they've done differently and they've done better is just play better defense. They're finally holding teams under a point per possession. They're less, you know, they're still dependent on the blocked shot, but they're doing a very good job of defending teams inside the arc. Other than that, I think that the team is playing more loosely and more confidently. And it's not even so much about forcing the turnovers themselves as it is about forcing pressure and getting the other team to get into quicker shots. And once you put up a quick shot, if the team can rebound it and get out in transition, you know, St. John's is very, very deadly when they're running, mm-hmm. let's say, downhill. Or Lavin used the term boat racing about what teams did to St. John's at times, mm-hmm. which always makes you think of, like, motorboat racing. But then you start thinking about motorboating and I don't know. And my podcast partner, Dave, says that that sounds dirty. I don't think so. I don't know.
Well, it can certainly lead downhill, but...
Yeah. And I don't know. It's an interesting team because you got to stop and say, is it the quality of the opponent? You know, Marquette's not very good right now. Providence is pretty good, but they're not, you know, an excellent team. They're not a top end team. They're not Villanova. They're not Creighton. So I don't know. I mean, is it just a nice streak, or are guys really growing into their roles? You know, Rishi Jordan seems like he's becoming more of an influential player. And with that, you know, he finds guys like Jakar Sampson who are better finishers than they are shot creators. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what's helping power the team.
Yeah, it's certainly, they're not going to argue with the matchups. Certainly Fox Sports 1 and their ratings are going to argue with another team coming up. So if St. John's can keep it rolling, it's going to make Madison Square Garden and the Big East tournament, you know, as good as it was in the past. When, you know, if you kind of have a two-man race, you know, heading into a tournament, it kind of just, the rest of the games almost seem academic, and you just hope no one gets upset.
Is that how Arch Madness felt?
You know,
is that how Arch Madness felt to you?
Yes, it's funny, because you see, and some people may disagree with this, but, you know, you see that matchup, and, you know, like 2 years ago, Creighton and Wichita were 1-2, and Wichita got upset in the semifinals, and Creighton played Illinois State in the MVC finals, you know, and that game was a great game. Went to like double overtime. I think it might have been one overtime, but you know, it went to overtime on CBS. It was a great game, but it was an Illinois State team that was playing for its life, you know, and Creighton, who was already set in stone, and Wichita State, who was already set in stone, was resting. So you know, it wasn't the matchup everybody wanted. Last year, Creighton and Wichita State had that great regular season title game on the last day of the season.
That was amazing. I saw that. That was amazing.
Yeah, and then they played again in the MVC final a week later, you know, and then that turned out to be Creighton's last Missouri Valley Conference game, but they played for the title. But, yeah, when you see those 1-2, you're like, okay, those are the two teams that are already in the tournament. You want to see them play for it all on a big stage, on a national stage, you know, and kind of showcase the conference. So, you know, with the Big East, it looks like it's heading that way with Creighton Villanova right now. But Georgetown's upset of Michigan State, you know, the way St. John's is coming on, the way Providence was playing last month, you know, and Xavier, it kind of looks like a conference that, you know, might, who knows what happens in the last month of the season where we end up going to the Big East tournament and it's kind of a toss-up between three or four teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tournament, I don't know, maybe it would do well for the tournament just to have Creighton, you know, run things and or Villanova run things and, you know, those fans getting to see that kind of performance. But, you know, the one of the features and one of the problems about the Big East is that it's so parity-laced that it's hard, and it's hard, I think, for people to understand that there are a lot of good teams in this conference. It's just that, you know, they do tend to beat up on each other in conference play. Mm-hmm. They weren't good enough to get those non-conference wins, and now you have a lot of teams that are, you know, in Ken Pom's rankings, all in the top 100, but they're not in the top, you know, 25, so people aren't really noticing mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, it's taken a while for them to get, you know, the respect that this conference, you know, any new conference, when you subtract teams from it and don't necessarily add perennial powers, you know, you lose that public perception. Like, the ACC didn't lose anything by adding Syracuse and adding Pittsburgh. And, you know, the American Athletic Conference added, you know, they kind of came together and added the defending champions, added UConn, who's won national championships, added Cincinnati, who has, you know, history going back a long ways, but the history is there with, you know, Oscar Robertson and those teams. But, you know, when you – but with the Big East, you know, you took away Syracuse, UConn, Louisville. I'm sure I'm forgetting more, but and then you added Creighton, Xavier Butler. So even as I've been going to Creighton games since I was 8 years old, I'm not gonna, you know, be delusional and say, okay, well, that's the same as losing Syracuse, UConn, and Louisville, you know. So I mean, it's just taking a little while for public perception to kind of catch up to, you know, what we see as quality versus what they perceive as quality. But you know, Villanova's beaten Kansas and Iowa, Georgetown's beaten Michigan State, Creighton's within six on a neutral floor against a team that's only lost one game all season and is in the top five. So, I mean,
San Diego State,
San Diego State. So this, and you know, Xavier pounded Cincinnati, who's currently only has I think two losses, and they're rolling right now. So
22-2, like the Jay-Z song,
exactly. So in Cincinnati, you know, to use the term boat race, they boat race Cincinnati. So I think, you know, once it's all shaken out, I think if these teams continue to play well, you know, at the top, I think you'll start to see some respect kind of flow in for the Big East this year as far as when the NCAA tournament rolls around. But having the, as far as the Big East tournament goes, I think what might create some excitement is if the St. John's team continues to play well and finishes strong in the second half, you know, that home crowd that, you know, you guys have a home away from home there with the history, certainly.
Yeah.
Might create some, you know, some memorable moments at the tournament this year too. What do you think?
At the very least, there'll be a lot of media attention on it, and I think that's sometimes it feels that you know, St. John's, there's this strong desire for St. John's to come back, and a lot of it honestly is that there are a lot of media outlets in New York, and a lot of them you know, remember St. John's or want to talk about St. John's, and the fan base is there too, but the fan base at times has been quiet, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, the student support is, you know, comes and goes, and that's what happens when you've lost for much of 10 years. So it's just kind of a thing, you know. It's like where it's, I don't know quite what that looks like, but you know, in 2011, when the during Steve Lavin's first year and the Johnnies went to the NCAA tournament, definitely as the season went on, those crowds got pretty vocal. They got pretty into it, and they were feeling it. You know, in the Pitt game, it was that place felt like it was really rocking for once.
Mm-hmm. What do you anticipate for tomorrow's matchup? Do you think the crowd will be? Do you expect the crowd to?
I have no idea.
Show up?
No idea. I mean, I feel like, you know, it'd be kind of cool if you know, some of Creighton's people come through. Though it is a Sunday night game. It's a, you know, long trip back to Omaha.
Right.
I guess you take Monday off or Tuesday off. But on the St. John's side, I don't know. I think people are excited. People seem to be wanting to buy tickets. They're engaged. They're talking about it. So, you know, one hopes that translates into, you know, people deciding to spend their Sunday night watching St. John's, and St. John's wanting to come out and put on a real performance. Mm-hmm. I think they could. And I think that it could be a really good atmosphere. But this is, honestly, much like a lot of the Fox Sports scheduling, this is entirely new. The idea of a Sunday 7 p.m. basketball game. That's new.
Mm, really?
I don't know quite what that looks like.
So this will be, so it might be a new diamond in the rough kind of thing then.
Well, I mean, it's an experiment.
I mean, Creighton's attendance numbers have responded so far, so, you know, hopefully the rest of the league catches up. Although they don't all have, you know, arenas the size of Creighton's, but certainly Madison Square Garden.
And also,
Square Garden can fill it up, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the fun things about what the Big East has brought in or has developed or whatever is that there are three teams that draw very well. Hinkle Fieldhouse, the historic, you know, the historic place that's always packed with Butler fans. But then the Cintas Center that also has become just a thing. You know, you get 9,000-10,000 people in a 10,000 person arena, and then Creighton's whole CenturyLink Center, is that what it's called? That arena is so. I mean, that there's nothing else going on in the town. Not, you know, what I mean. There's nothing
it's
else
not
going on
at all. People are excited about Creighton basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it. It's kind of like in Louisville where, you know, Louisville packs it in because there's not a whole lot else going on in terms of high-level sport action. Mm-hmm. So if you're into that kind of thing, it's kind of like your pro team.
Yeah, Creighton, you know, there's no pro teams in Omaha. There's, you know, Creighton's the best basketball team currently going on. So, you know, when it's in this time of the season, there's no other competition as far as football goes and that sort of thing. So, you know, if you like basketball, that's the place to be.
For sure.
But so history is, you know, history's on your side tomorrow as far as this matchup goes, because Creighton is 0-4 in road games against St. John, so, or I guess 0-5.
Oh, 0-5
away from home.
When was the last road game? 1952 or something?
Yeah, the last true road game was in 65, but the last time they played away from home, away from Omaha, was in 71. So it's not recent history, history is still on your side.
Well, I think my older brother was born then, so I don't know. It's kind of recent history.
It's
that's an ancient time of a different kind of basketball.
Exactly.
I believe they used peach baskets, and the ball was made out of squirrel hide that they found.
Exactly. I'm not even sure the 3-point line was around back then, but who knows.
Oh, I know it wasn't. You know, I'm not sure there was a 2-point line. I think it was all like half points.
Yeah, it was just there was a square, and then there was a bunch of players running around.
Yeah. There were no arenas, just sort of outdoor courts.
Yeah, it was just, you know, people showed up and they said, "What's this?" No, it's bad.
And they're like, "I don't know."
Bad.
Put the ball in the place.
Yeah, well, there's a ball and there's guys running around. Let's watch it.
Matt, thank you for coming on with Not Half Bad. It's been good talking to you, and hopefully, you know, well, here's hoping that Creighton doesn't win tomorrow, but can win the rest of their games on their way to a deep NCAA tournament run.
Likewise, for St. John's.
And, you know, as the year goes on, we might try to have you guys on again, or, you know, reach out to you in the off season. So hopefully you'll be available, and hopefully you enjoyed your time on here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Any of the guys at White and Blue Review would be more than happy to come on and, you know, share their insight with you. So I appreciate the time.
Cool. And is there anything you want to say about the site that for people who don't know White and Blue Review?
You know, just check it out. It's whiteandbluereview.com. We, you know, we cover all of Creighton athletics. So if you want to just learn about any sport, I know baseball's coming up. If you want to, you know, see how the Jays stack up with, you know, the rest of the conference, or you want to see how the rest of the conference stacks up with the Jays, just, you know, come check it out. We'll have the baseball previews up pretty soon. So,
you know, you guys do a great job over there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good rest of your Saturday, and we'll chat later.
You too. Thank you.
Scott, this is Norman.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Dude, this is the greatest moment of my life. I'm finally getting to talk to Scott King, the amazing purveyor of the wonders that appear on the Bearcats blog.
I think it's the greatest day of my life, to talk to you.
I mean, where are we going to go with this? I mean, can we have a conversation only about the OC? This could happen.
It really could happen. It's like, what, this was the 10-year anniversary or something?
Oh my God, was it really? I did not know that. I did not know. Well, let me backtrack a little bit for our listeners and toss in a, yes, you're still listening to Not Half Bad. This is still Norman of Rumble in the Garden, which you can find at eCoast Bias. You can find me at eCoast Bias or rumbleinthegarden.com or RumbleSBN on Twitter. And today, Dave White isn't with us, the purveyor of On the Banks, but we're going to talk a little bit about the American Conference with Scott of Bearcats Blog, who is a prolific blogger and used to stay up late nights talking about all sorts of fun conversations. And we'll talk a little bit about the American, about Cincinnati basketball, and about wherever this may take us. Scott, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anything else that you'd like to say as an introduction for people who don't know you or your blog?
No, that pretty much covered it.
Cool.
Like, I'm on Twitter at Bearcats Blog, which is easy to find.
It is easy to find. He is out there. So, okay. So, you know, we often talk about St. John's and we talk about Rutgers and we talk about basically the way that both teams are trying very hard to be –
at least competent to get to the NCAA tournament, to be in that middling level where you could start talking about, you know, moving up and becoming a really good team. Cincinnati, though, has tasted the heights back in the Bob Huggins era, and after that, well, fell apart. Mick Cronin was brought in, and he's raised their profile, gotten them to the NCAA tournament, what, twice, three times now, is that it? More?
Yes, three times in a row.
Three times in a row.
Last 3 years.
And this year has a team that is 22-2, like the Jay-Z song, and maybe it isn't getting a lot of publicity, but has possibly one of the best defenses in the country. So tell us a little bit about Cincinnati and how, is this a surprise?
I think it's definitely a surprise. There was a lot of people who thought they could be like a top four team in the conference and maybe be better than UConn or Memphis, but nobody thought that they would be the top team in the league this far in the season. Because coming into the year, like, they lost Kazmir Wright and they lost Jaquan Parker, who were two of their three leading scorers last year. So they had like a lot of offensive questions after Sean Kilpatrick. And Justin Jackson's been pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's averaging something like 11 points a game in conference play when he averaged like 5 last year.
What's he doing differently? How has he emerged?
The main thing is just his confidence level is extremely high. Like, he's always been like the type of player, like when he's had it going, it's always been on the defensive end. And when they go to him on offense, he either stood outside on the wing or he would just pass the ball. You chuck a lot. But this year he's been in the block area a lot. He's developed some good post moves. He likes to try a Tim Duncan shot off the glass, which is like oddly successful.
Like so many other things. I mean, one thing I always liked about watching Justin Jackson, along with his mean mugs, is that he was so energetic and so, I don't know, he was one of those guys who, he didn't seem very mechanical at all. He seemed very just intuitive. Like, he just was playing, you know?
Oh, definitely. That's a giant part of his game, too, this year. It's like he's just going with his instincts, and it's working out really well for him. Because he's, like, taking people off the dribble, which is really surprising to see, like, somebody 6'9 taking other guys off the dribble.
Would you say then that he's do you think he deserves all American like league honors? Like, should he be on that first team?
Oh yeah, I think he should definitely be on the first team all league.
And so, I guess, I mean, but let's go back to Cincinnati as a whole. Best season in recent memory?
Oh yeah, definitely. Anytime you're 22-2 and 11-0 in the league, it's one of the best ones in a long time.
They're 11-0. Oh my gosh, I think I didn't even quite grasp it. They're 11-0. They've beaten Louisville. Who else have they beaten? All the top teams?
Yeah, they just beat UConn on Thursday, and at the beginning of the year, they beat SMU at home, and they won at Memphis. So they beat everybody so far.
Impressive. So, wow. I mean, what do you think that this can continue, or is this just sort of a hot streak? I mean, considering that, you know, much as always, Cincinnati had an out-of-conference schedule that was sort of like, I don't know.
Awful?
Yeah, it was like playing a high school team, a bunch of snowmen, the Washington Generals. I mean, really, where do they find these teams?
I don't really know. It's like they find like one of the lower tier conferences and they schedule the entire league.
It's like the MEAC. Hey, you guys want to come to Cincinnati? You'd love it. The Big South is very nice, you know. I'm thinking of the Appalachian and Carolinas there. There's very good beer over there. I want to be the champion of that.
That's what I hear. I've never been out there.
But you're so close.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean,
so
seriously,
close.
Seriously,
but
get
so
in a car.
Far away.
Get in a car. Start drive over the mountains, at least into Asheville, and just start drinking. Well, find a place to sleep because You don't have to. I mean, it's Asheville. You can seriously just sleep on the ground there. Everybody else does it.
I'm writing that down right now.
Yes, yes. Filled with, just go in the summer, you know, just say you're in the bluegrass and you'll find some people who'll put you up or something.
Okay, I'm sure that's going to work out well for me.
I shouldn't make fun of Asheville. It's a lovely city. But back, okay, so back to Cincinnati. Who else has emerged? I mean, one thing, when I was just skimming a few things about Cincinnati, I did notice that, and it seems to be like some sort of point of contention, that there's a real, not an issue, but an interesting, there's some interesting stuff going on with the point guard situation. You know, there's a Gelon Gwynn, is that how you pronounce it? Gwynn?
Yeah, it's Gwynn.
Gelon Gwynn and then Troy Caupin, however you pronounce his name, do seem to be splitting time. What's up with that?
That's been pretty much how it's been the entire season, is Gwynn and Caupin. Caupin, now you have me saying his name weird.
Yeah. It just sounds so, it looks so French. Caupin. It's like beignet.
I wonder if, like, that's how you really pronounce it, and everybody's just Americanized it so badly these days.
Caupin.
But, yeah, they've been splitting time. Like, Gwynn has started every game, and he's playing, like, around, like, 20 minutes. And Caupin, he's been playing, like, a little bit under lately, because he's gotten pretty cold, and since like the middle of the conference season, he's hit that freshman wall, it looks like. I think he only played 15 minutes against UConn. But they pretty much play whoever has the hot hand at point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Because neither one of them are really like that great passing the ball. Like Caupin had like a great game against Temple.
I'm looking at his stats right now. 9 assists against Temple. But other than that, he's a 1-2 assist guy.
Oh, yeah, big time. And they've started playing both of them off the ball a little bit. Kilpatrick's run the point some.
Really? Okay. if you say so, that seems like one of those not great ideas. And also, Gelon is, I'm looking at his stats right now, and wow, those are not the passing stats of a point guard at all.
Oh, yeah. His like assist numbers really low. Even if you just break it down to conference numbers only,
yeah,
he's not in the top 5 on the team in assists, which is kind of crazy.
His assist rate, according to Ken Pom, is 9.9. That's like a dunking forwards assist rate. That's like a this ball is hot, I got to get rid of it, like once a game assist. Good lord.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's like point guard in name only.
Yeah. Is Cincinnati a lot more dependent then on one-on-one play?
Yeah, they've been, well, not as much as they were earlier in the year, but they still need somebody to like get the offense going, to get other people shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like they started to become better at like getting each other good looks. But for the most part, it's going to be like Kilpatrick is going to create something for himself,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to throw it inside to Jackson. Then he takes his time on the block.
So as Sean Kilpatrick is approaching age 28 or whatever, 25, we all know that he's older than dirt. How's his veteran leadership been?
It's been great. Him and Jackson and Titus Rubles have really been the steady forces for the team, and they're the reason that Cincinnati's got a 22-2 record. Because when things break down late in the game, it's one of those three who's making the big play. Like, Rubles hit the two biggest free throws of the game against UConn. And Kilpatrick scored, I think, like 10 points in a row at the end of the Louisville game.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, and just to kind of change things up a little bit, you know, along with talking about their offensive leadership, how have they been, you know, tell me about the defense, basically, is what I'm asking. I asked like 3 half questions there. Yes, I know. But yeah, the defense, what's going on there? It's amazing.
Yeah, it just seems like it's just one of those things where everybody's like already a good defender, and they all work really hard to be good at defense. I think it helps because they have somebody like Jackson on the back line who can wipe out any of their misses, or like misses on defense where somebody gets past them. Mm-hmm. It helps to have a rim protector like that. And it also helps when your guards, like Gwynn, is a really solid defender. And I think Kilpatrick, like as good as a scorer he is, he's almost as good as a defender. He guarded Napier on UConn. He did a pretty good job on him on Thursday.
Kilpatrick does have good length for that. And I'm looking at the I'm looking at the KenPom stats, and apparently, except for a little blip against Temple, this is what happens apparently when you let Kaupain start doling out assists. You know, Temple starts scoring or something. But except for the blip against Temple, Cincinnati has not allowed a team to score more than 1 point per possession, and that includes Louisville. Wow.
Yeah, it's been really, really impressive. And it's not just because they play kind of slow. Mm-hmm. It's like there comes a point in the second half of a lot of these games lately, like it, with Memphis, and even you could go back as far as like the Pitt game, mm-hmm. where they just like stop teams and like they just don't score. They'll have 3 or 4, sometimes like 5 or 6 minutes in the second half of games where other teams just aren't scoring. And that's how they won a lot of the close games that they've won. Like UConn, they shut UConn down pretty well on Thursday. I think they went like 5 minutes without a basket. And Louisville didn't score the last 4 minutes.
Wait, who didn't score?
Like Louisville, when they played them, Louisville didn't score the last segment at all after they took the lead.
As far as their tournament hopes, do you think this is a... It's not a Final Four team, would you say? Or do you think that they can do enough to get there?
No, I don't think it's a Final Four team, really. Their offense just isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at the KenPom rankings, like despite their record and despite how good their defense is, I think their defense is like top 5.
It's 5th, yeah. And the offense is 128 adjusted.
Yeah, they're still not a top 20 KenPom team. Which seems kind of surprising, but like that's their biggest problem. And like you said, Temple made a gigantic comeback on them. So they can be scored upon, which is the biggest worry. Like they're one of those teams where matchups are so, so important in the tournament. So if they get put with like Creighton or something in like a 2-3 game, I think they'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I think so too. They faced Creighton last year, or was it 2 years ago?
It was last year.
Okay. Because, and I kind of remember that being the sort of game where it was like, you're watching, you're like, I don't know what's going on here. It wasn't like when the offense of Creighton was winning, or the defense of Cincinnati was... Actually, I don't even remember who won that game. Cincinnati won, right?
No, Creighton ended up winning.
Oh, see, it shows you how much I remember. I think that's something about Cincinnati games. I feel like I get into this fog of Cincinnati where it's just like, you know, things are happening and I'm like, man, I don't know. It's a Cincinnati game. I'm falling asleep.
That's one of like the good descriptions about Cincinnati is like you really don't know what's happening in some of the games.
Yeah, it's just like there's a bunch of deflections. Some guys are kind of molesting each other, and you're like, I don't know what's happening, but they seem to be winning. You know, those old Creighton, I mean not Creighton, Cincinnati St. John's games. They were so ugly, man.
Oh yeah, how could I forget?
I mean, it was just like hand to hand combat in a darkened room.
Where everybody shot like 35%,
yep.
And the score never got out of the 50s.
Yep, real winners. I gotta say that, you know, while I miss having you and the Cincinnati Bearcats around, and you know all the New Yorkers they have, it's kind of nice to not have to watch Cincinnati games anymore. They're miserable.
Oh yeah, they're not one of the most aesthetically pleasing teams to watch. It's an acquired taste.
Like truffles or something.
Yeah, so the truffles of college basketball.
All right. So I guess tell me a little bit more about how you're feeling about the AAC and Cincinnati's desire to get out of the AAC.
So this year the league is like pretty good because there's still a lot of good. There's like five good teams in it. But next year when Louisville leaves and then like the Tulanes and the East Carolinas and like all the joke teams, when like people say, oh, look at Conference USA getting back together, that's when it's going to get kind of depressing. Mm-hmm. And Cincinnati hired their new athletic director like just to get out of the league. Like he said that during his press conference. He said,
I was amazed by that.
Yeah, he said, we want to get out of the league. That's the number one thing that they hired me for. Which I thought that was crazy, too, because who actually comes out and admits that?
Yeah, it's like the whole work of conference alignment is doing things behind closed doors and going, you know, I believe in our league. And everybody knows you're saying, I believe in our league and I believe I'm going to leave our league, you know?
Yeah, like apparently like Louisville paid the exit fee to leave the league like 5 years ago when Pitt and Syracuse did. Mm-hmm. But like they didn't come out and say it like Cincinnati has, which just seems weird because their only option is like the Big 12, so they have to hope that they expand sometime, which just seems weird.
And they haven't had a desire to. I mean, I feel like I was talking about this on Twitter yesterday, that the idea of Cincinnati wanting to go to the Big 12 seems a little ridiculous, but then you think about the idea of West Virginia having a travel partner and the idea that, you know, maybe the Big 12 would like to rake in some money from a conference championship game in football because, as we know, that's the big driver. And I guess, but it doesn't, I mean, I don't know much about Cincinnati as a school, but it seems like culturally that seems like a weird fit. Cincinnati is more of a commuter school. It's more of a city school, less than it is like a big state university, which is what the Big 12 is generally filled with.
Yeah, it'd definitely be a weird fit in there with, like, Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Like, Oklahoma State. It'd just be kind of odd. But they have no other option to, like, get out of the American.
There's always the Horizon League.
Yeah. They could just become independent and be, like, BYU, I guess.
God, I think, you know, I think BYU has enough pull that, you know, they can do things like pull off their own league, you know, Mormons watch only or whatever. And teams like Texas could pull that off, but I feel like Cincinnati is not in that position. Cincinnati could very much be a MAC team, honestly.
Oh, definitely. If they actually did go independent, none of their games would be on TV. It'd be a terrible decision.
That's tough. You know, I kind of understand. I will honestly say that I don't feel like a whole lot of sympathy, being that Cincinnati also jumped their way into the Big East. It's not like they're an old Big East team like, well, no. I mean, I was going to say like UConn, but then even UConn doesn't really have a lot of a leg to stand on. They were a basketball school with, you know, one AA football that decided they wanted to go big Division I, and then they got left behind because they were too fresh and too new.
That seems like the same way that South Florida got left behind as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about them. South Florida I almost feel bad for, actually. Because I think they did a really good job of building a fairly solid program in a football-rich area. But, you know, if you're saying that South Florida got left behind, then what about UCF? UCF also should, you know, deserve some of the same, even though everybody knows that UCF fans are odious human beings. Most of them. You, the UCF fan who's listening to this right now, you're great. You're a great person.
Yeah, that person's an amazing person. But the rest of them are just kind of...
A little shaky.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice phrase for it.
Yeah. So who gets out first? Cincinnati, Connecticut, South Florida?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I think if anybody got out first, it would be Cincinnati. But I think if the ACC, like, expanded, I kind of think they would take UConn. But then who would the second team be? It would have to be Cincinnati, wouldn't it? At least that's what I tell myself.
You can tell yourself that, but... somebody made the point that Cincinnati actually has a fertile football recruiting ground. And that's great, But I also think that, I don't know, South Florida is quite appealing if you want to, well, I don't know. I mean, do you want to, like, break up your Florida recruiting? Does Boston College want to have UConn? And Boston College has been, you know, they jumped early, so they've been in the ACC. And they don't, I think they don't want UConn in the conference. So that's a problem.
Yeah, see, that's like the big thing with the ACC expansion rumors. So they'd have to find two teams that they wanted. And last, when they expanded, there was like one team that they wanted. And it was Louisville.
Yeah.
That's like, if they didn't want UConn then, I don't think they'll want them at all.
Yeah. And maybe that's just the new reality. It's tough in football. In basketball, you can always, you know, being in a decent enough league that, you know, that gets on TV, you know, it's fine. You know, basketball doesn't bring in the big money. But in football, if you're not in a big league, you're in the MAC, you know, and it's cute football, and, you know, it's great when you have whatever that Northern Illinois guy was who is really great. But nobody's going to pay attention to Ball State. You know, nobody cares.
Oh, definitely, and especially with the playoff now, that only one team, not like the Power Five, makes it. That's going to make things really tough from here on out, which is, like, football is the big reason that they need to leave the American. Because they're not going to play any conference games that people care about. Let's be honest.
That's true.
Besides maybe one against Central Florida or whoever happens to be good that year.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to play a lot of big teams out of conference. And chances are they'll probably lose.
Because they'll probably play those games on the road. You won't be able to get home and homes.
Yeah, and they'll be playing teams like Ohio State, like Miami, like one of the leader programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so just losing one of those games will, like, knock them out of any slim championship picture, which they probably wouldn't even be in now.
Yeah.
Like, they just have to hope that they could win the little guy scramble and make a BCS bowl or whatever they are now.
Yeah, whatever they're called.
I don't really know how that's supposed to work.
Yeah, I don't know either. We don't have football, so I don't know, man. Well, I do feel bad, and I'm playing the little violin for Cincinnati. That's my song.
That was a good song.
Oh, so wait, one thing that I did want to, that I'd mention to you over email, and I wanted to ask. I see that Oscar Robertson is still heckling McCronin and coaching from behind the bench. How's that going?
A lot of that stuff actually seemed like it stopped lately. At least nobody is reporting it anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
but it seemed like, I think I was reading something about their win over UConn, where Robertson was trying to indicate to Kilpatrick that he needed to shoot more. I was like, I mean, dude, come on.
Yeah, there's, like, people who just don't care, and, like, Oscar Robertson's one of those people who just say whatever he wants. He's one of those cranky old men.
Yes. He's, like, 75, you know? Oh, I'll read this to you from the CBS. I think this is from the AP, but this is on CBS's site. Even Oscar Robertson wanted to see more of the Sean Kilpatrick show. The Hall of Famer sat courtside and watched the senior guard score 26 points and get a team-high 12 rebounds on Thursday night, blah, 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 over Connecticut. During a late timeout, Robertson raised his hand in a shooting motion towards Kilpatrick, who knew what he meant. Kilpatrick's response, a take-it-easy motion. He kept giving me the signal to shoot, Kilpatrick said. I told him to relax. What is going on? He's like your other assistant coach.
That's great.
I mean, come on, dude. Cranky old man. He's sort of like the Bill Cosby of basketball.
They called him cranky old man like 10 years ago when I was at school. So I imagine he's only gotten worse since then.
He just gets like, you know, gets walked in and everybody's like, oh God, Oscar's here. Clear the way.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's how it works. So it's like, oh God, why is he here for this game?
I mean, it's great, and you wanna celebrate your greats, but man, you know, when they're getting in the way of things, it's like, dude, come on.
Like they say, like back in the Stevenson era, when they weren't really that good, like that's when he was pretty intense with like yelling at like yelling at the players and stuff, because I guess he didn't like Mick back then. He probably still doesn't like him that much now.
Yeah, that was the story, that he really didn't like Mick. But apparently he doesn't have enough pull because Mick is still there.
Yeah, I guess he's not one of those old legends that's tied in with the administration, at least on that kind of level.
Which is good, because I think sometimes those are, you know, those distortions really, really can screw with a program, and you start doing things that don't quite make sense, you know, or you become Kentucky in the, you know, Billy Clyde Gillespie years.
Yeah, and you end up running off some pretty good coaches sometimes. Like, if they ran off Cronin, like, after, like, the Lance Stevenson year, who knows how good they would be now. I don't think they'd be where they are right now.
They'd be Tulane level.
Oh, God.
Think on that. You know, I mean, the one good thing about Tulane, though, is that everybody gets a chance to go to New Orleans. New Orleans is really fun. Their campus is very nice.
Isn't Danny Manning their coach now?
What? No way. Really?
I thought somebody told me that the other day.
He was at Tulsa last I saw.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah,
maybe
no, it was no. Tulsa, Tulane still has Ed Conroy.
Okay.
And no, still
he was at one of those T schools in
Tulsa. It's all kind of the same. I know. The Golden Hurricane, which either sounds like a drink or like a really weird sex act.
Yeah, that's the sex act that happens after you've been drinking.
Yes. Nobody ever wants to talk about it.
I
don't want to talk about it. Okay, this has gone too far.
That's one of those ones that somebody has to tell you about. Like, oh man, last night you got really wasted. So we think you pulled a Golden Hurricane in here.
It's kind of like the Upper Deck or the Dirty Sanchez. And with that, I'll ask you one more question in general, since we have talked about our love for certain kinds of television. What are you watching these days?
I'm not really watching anything that interesting these days. I'm Justified. I've been watching that and like Archer.
Mm-hmm.
And the NBC shows like Community and Parks and Rec. Like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Like, basketball's kind of taken over lately.
Sure, yeah. Same thing for me. I've kind of gotten into the Chicago PD show, which is weird. I don't know why, but I flipped it on. I was like, oh, this is compelling. And also, it has lots of shots of Chicago, where I live, and including my local train station. And I was like, oh, man, that's home. That's awesome.
Well, speaking of that, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
And like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to say that I've been watching pretty religiously.
Yeah, that's become a really good show pretty fast.
Yeah. Great cast. Really, really funny cast.
Yeah, it's like they're all, like, really good, which just seems surprising, like a first-year show like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Andre Brauer is, if you know who Andre Brauer is, he's like, he's amazingly funny as somebody who's very unfunny. It's mind-blowing how funny he is. And what's the one who plays Amy Santiago, Melissa Fumero? I think she was on, like, All My Children or something, and I thought she would be the weak link, but she's great.
She is. She's been pretty great. And she's pretty hot, too, if we're being honest.
Yes, let's be honest. Yes, she's pretty hot. We can admit that, you know. She's no Autumn Reeser, but, you know.
Who is?
And let's see, what else? I guess I've been watching The New Girl, and I've been back on Modern Family, which is a surprisingly resilient show, I think.
Yeah, Modern Family, like, I don't watch it, like, all the time, but I watch it sometimes. It's, like, I think it's still funny. I don't think it's, like, as awesome as everybody said it was at first. I don't think it's, like, terrible. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, there's something a little bit, not lacking exactly, but I think the first couple of seasons, they did a very good job of merging the storylines together and having a real classic sitcom hijinks kind of thing modernized for you know, for these days. And I think they're still doing a pretty good job of it, but it does feel a little, you know, they're stretching a little bit.
Yeah, because some things like that always seem, like, contrived, how they make it all, like, come together at the end.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Did you ever see the show Happy Endings?
No, I never watched Happy Endings, and it's like never on Netflix, so I've never seen it.
Yeah, I don't think it's on Hulu either. I've got to find a way to acquire that show, because I came to it, I think, in the last season. A friend of ours had said, like, oh, I watched this show, it's really stupid, you know, and I was like, okay. And I watched it, I was like, you were so wrong, and you were, like, it's so, like... You know, I think there's certain people who get a little embarrassed about watching shows that are, you know, comedies of errors or hijinks or whatever. And I watched that show and I thought it was brilliant. It was so wink-wink about everything it was doing, about being very much a sitcom and very, very much about putting people into situations where it was situation comedy. I thought it was great. And everybody seemed to be just really sharp at their ability to riff off of everybody else. Really good show.
Yeah, so what I heard, but like... Every time I would go to watch, I always heard it was being canceled.
Yeah.
It's like I always waited, and then it like never is on Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It got canned, and it was sad. So I don't know if there's – are there any like St. John's-y things that you're curious about? Or?
Yeah, do they still play – like everybody plays one-on-one and D'Angelo Harrison throws up terrible shots. Are they still that St. John's team?
Yes. Well, I mean, when they get out in transition, they're very good. But other than that, in the half court, it's not exactly one-on-one. Rashid Jordan is good at breaking down the defense and getting other people shots. So Jakar Sampson sometimes looks like a good baller. But, yeah, you know, it's kind of a lot of one-on-one play. They're getting better at it, and I think that's been behind their recent surge.
I've seen the past couple of games. They've looked really impressive the past few games.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's defense and then a bit of confidence and just playing with, you know, with an attack mindset and not getting stuck in the half court. Scott, I want to thank you for coming on as a guest on the Not Half Bad podcast. We're definitely hoping to have you on again. I hope you're going to have yourself a good day now that you started off with talking about Cincinnati hoops.
Well, thanks for having me. I don't know how the day could get any better. This may be the plateau.
I don't know. I mean, I think you can. I've got nothing. It's winter. You know, I can't say like, oh, you're going to go out and. I've got nothing, absolutely nothing. Don't I'm looking out a window right now. There's snow coming down. Yeah, there's. I don't know. I've got no positives for you right now.
But hopefully Cincinnati will win. That'll be a positive.
That's true. They have SMU tonight.
On ESPNU, the home of the American Conference.